It's the Lee Rayburn Show, and our guest this hour needs no introduction, but let me do it anyway. He was the host of the nationally syndicated radio show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now the host of the new and very popular podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Dr. Pastor returning to WPR News to answer questions from you today at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. And Zorba, I am honored to have you. Thank you for coming back to WPR.
To be in your presence. I mean, come on, you're the man. You're the guy taking over for Larry. That is a tough act to follow, but you're doing a fabulous job of that. I mean, you can tell your listeners adore you. They love to hear you. You are a great guy moving forward. So,
well, I am honored and very humbled. And the fact that I get to have you this hour is exciting to me because you're one of those voices from Wisconsin Public Radio that go all the way back to the Larry Mueller days. So
That's right. 35 years basically with Tom Clark on his show.
Yep.
Then that turned into, you know, our show conducting, and it was great. It was a great run. You can't argue with like more than three decades of being on WPR. That's astounding. That is astounding.
Yeah. See, for me, I think I can't argue with more than 3 years. I get 3 years, and I think that's a good run right there. So wait,
before we get into it, I have to tell you. So I've got this podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor, and I decided I would go on State Street, and I have a sandwich board. You know those sandwich boards that you people wear to advertise things?
Sure.
So I had it. I went to Art Fair on the Square, outside of Art Fair on the Square, stood there. And basically, I thought, oh, people are just going to come up and just sort of take a picture of the board and ask for a card. Not at all. The ones who came up were radio listeners.
Yep.
And they looked at me and they said, is that what you look like? You're on the air. And they all wanted to take selfies. So about 30, 35 people wanted to take selfies with me. And it was so kind of rewarding. They told me their story. They told me about WPR. It was surprisingly fun. I thought it would be fun, but I'm not into advertising or self-aggrandizement and stuff. So anyway.
Is that what you look like was the question?
That's right. Yes. That was the question. Was I supposed to take that as a compliment or not? I didn't ask that question.
It's just a natural course of radio because when you don't see somebody and you're listening, you paint the picture of them in your mind.
That's
and
right.
and
That's
as
right.
a radio fan, first and foremost, they are never who you think they are in your mind. They're always something.
Never.
And it's just, it's part of being in radio and I always enjoy it. I was like, What did you think I looked like?
Well, that's very funny, and they can't really describe it, but we have these images that we bring up somewhere in the back of our subconscious, and that's kind of what goes. But I didn't do the follow-up. Do I look better or worse than you thought? I didn't ask that because I didn't want an answer. And with so many people taking selfies, it would probably be 50-50.
I also saw a video of you singing at the Memorial Union Terrace. Congratulations on your performance.
Right. So I've decided, you know, we exercise all the time. We try to eat right. We do aerobic exercise. But I'd like to be able to continue with my voice. And I'm 79. So I decided I'm going to learn to go to a voice coach. And I thought I can sing on tune. My kids said I can't sing in my tune, my friends. And so, yes, I sang Blue Moon to my lady friend, my girlfriend. My wife died, Penny, 50 years ago, or rather 50 years of marriage. She died 3 years ago. And yes, you can find someone else in your life. And so she didn't know it, but I serenaded her with my podcast, the guy who I do the podcast with, Carl, who has a band called, Crib with the last name we can't say.
Right. They've been around forever in Madison, but this was relatively new to you, but you bring up a bigger picture from a medical point of view that there is something about our health that means having a full life well lived constitutes good health.
All right. No, you're totally it. So my theory is this. We are always in our life either expanding or contracting, either one or the other. When we're young, we're doing things. When we have a family, if we have a family, we can't stop because the kids are there. We have a job and other things. And then once we get past that and we're sort of in chapter three, many people, as they get older, begin to contract. They begin to say, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that and I can't do this. And they don't realize, yes, like I ski, I can't do the blacks anymore. I'm not going to do it. Maybe an easy blue black, but I can still ski if I want to. And then the other issue is, you know, go outside your comfort zone. I don't mind lecturing to people, but getting up in the back of the Union in front of maybe, I don't know, 500, 1,000 people singing Blue Moon, let me tell you, it was stage fright. It was stage fright. But I felt so good afterwards, you know, those endorphins. So we must continue to do this for our life. And that never is a discussion in your doctor's office or nurse practitioner or PA will say, what's this, what's that, how's your, that. But we don't say, what are you doing that's new? And we should do that throughout our life. It's a better life.
There's a chemical reaction that goes on in there. And I've heard this discussion before with mental health professionals that if you are feeling down, go out there and do something good for somebody else, because that will that releases something chemical inside you, that there is a biochemical reaction that will make you feel better.
Absolutely. And this is not new wisdom. Of course, it's ancient wisdom. And you may or may not know, but I'm one of the physicians for His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I've been, you can see from your eyes.
I did not know that.
And I go to India once or twice a year. I'll be going to India in August to see him. And I have a humanitarian project. That's another story. But anyway, so I've been around him many times. He came to Madison first in 1979 to visit Geshe Sopa, who was a Tibetan scholar and then eventually at the university a scholar, because he escaped with His Holiness when he left Tibet in 1959. So I've been around him many times. And he always says, compassion is the key. Even if you are a selfish person, you realize if you're a wise selfish person, when you do something for someone else, you get a benefit too. And there is an endorphin, you know, serotonin, oxytocin response, because that's how we are as humans. We want to help each other. Yeah.
It's that ancient wisdom, but it's also medical
science.
Yeah, fascinating. 100%. Let's get to the calls now for our guest, Dr. Zorba Pastor, at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. And we'll start with Michael in Madison. Michael, hello.
Hi there. I just have a comment. I was developing gout over the last couple years, which is extremely painful, as the good doctor knows, and some patients know. It's just extremely annoying. I recognized that red meat was a trigger, so I cut out pretty much most red meat, but I would still get flare-ups now and again. And it turns out that quinine, which is a drug prescribed for gout, is present in tonic water. So I drink a small 7-ounce can of the light version of tonic water, which has less sugar, every day, mixed with orange juice, and my gout is completely resolved for many months now. So I just thought I would offer that to the doctor. He probably knows, and anyone out there listening that may suffer from gout, which is an awful thing.
Yeah, suffering is the exact description for it.
So let me clarify that. By the way, you know, there are great humans in the past that had gout, Benjamin Franklin, Louis XIV, you know, you're in those hands. But a few things. There are a number of triggers for gout that have to do with food, mainly shellfish. We don't eat a lot of it. Lobster every day. Who can afford that? Red meat for some. High fructose corn syrup is a definite trigger for gout.
Huh.
And don't know exactly why. I did a bunch of things in my career, among other things. I did research for new medications for gout. So first of all, quinine is a folk remedy. For many people, it works. We don't actually prescribe it. So quinine water is a good thing. It may keep away the gout, and I would definitely do that. Trauma causes gout. And then, of course, if you're getting gout on a regular basis, there's a medication that's been around for probably 40 years called allopurinol. You have to take it every day, but it reduces uric acid, which you make too much when you have gout. gout. So you find, first of all, you find a diet that works, no red meat, quinine water every day. Great idea. Stay away from high fructose corn syrup. And then if that doesn't work, go for the meds, because that can make a huge difference in your life.
Michael, thank you for the call and the remedy. We'll go to Jackie in La Crosse next. Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
What do you have for Dr. Pastor today?
Well, we are grandparents, and we have our youngest one is 11 months old who goes to daycare and has been having one virus after another. So when we see him, it's about 3 days later that we are both down with whatever he brought from daycare. So what are some suggestions you have on how the grandparents can try to avoid getting sick? Because we love seeing him, but we get sick every time.
The most important thing, stop hugging those grandchildren. Just put them at arm's distance.
Wait a minute. I thought compassion was the key, Zora, but now you're telling grandma not to hug the grandkids?
Exactly. Not possible. That's like, really? That's what I should do? That is not going to happen. And, you know, of course, you know, the next step, which you're also not going to do, is wear a mask when you're with your grandchild. That is going to be a hard thing to do. They're going to pull on the mask and they're just going to say, why don't you have your mask? So that would be something. So a few things that might work. First of all, have hand sanitizer around. Just and put it on your hands every so often, because part of that is the schmutz that they have. They're touching you. They're touching their face. Wipe their hands in hand sanitizer and you. That's one way. So you stop that. You're not going to stop the hugging, but you can put this fun stuff on. Oh, let's put this fun stuff on, make it into a game. And that is one thing to do. The other thing is you might try the old vitamin C remedy, 500 milligrams, 2 to 3 times a day when you're actually around the grandchildren. That might help. And that's about it.
Did you say 500 milligrams of vitamin C 2 to 3 times a day?
Yeah, 2 to 3 times a day. That's an old-fashioned folk remedy. Some people say it works. Linus Pauling said that. He won the Nobel Prize in physics and in peace. His research with vitamin C wasn't very good, but some people may be affected by that. So those are things you may do. And then, hey, it's the cost of grandparenting.
But it goes back to compassion being key. You're the grandparents. You want to give them all the love in the world and everything they need. But at the same time, you don't want to...
Well, they're giving you everything they have. You're giving everything they need, and they're giving it back.
That does not seem like a fair trade. Poor Jackie and all the other grandparents. But, washing hands, hand sanitizer, staying as clean as possible, minimizing your risks, and upping your immune system as much as possible. Are there other strategies for increasing your immunity?
Prayer.
Which has been found to be effective in some cases.
And that's not my tool chat, my toolkit. I'll just say prayer. That's it.
Jackie, thank you so much for the call and the age-old question, which grandparents have had going back to the start of grandchildren. Zorba, how are you staying cool in these temperatures, and how important is it to be mindful of it?
Well, this is a big issue. Going back to Chicago, I think it was about 20 years ago, 750 people died during a heat epidemic, heat dome in Chicago. 750 people die. More people die of heat than die of cold. So we think in the wintertime, people will be outside, they'll be cold, they'll freeze to death. That's true. But more people die of heat. It's like 20 to 1 or 30 to 1 more die of heat. So first of all, if you're in a house and it's not air conditioned at a time like this, this is where you have to look locally and see where you can go into an air conditioned space. In libraries and other things, every municipality in the state has an air conditioned place that people can go to. That's very important for senior citizens, people with metabolic disease and so on. They've got to be there. A fan only does so much, because you've got to perspire for the fan to make you feel better, but that still doesn't do anything to the air that's going into your lungs. I mean, it's still the same temperature. So you want to get to a cool space. That's it. If you know a neighbor, and usually an elderly person or somebody who lives alone, and you can go next door and knock on their door or contact them. They may be having heat problems that you don't know about, especially if they don't have anyone who checks in with them. And if you don't know, and you're in an apartment building, and you've seen a neighbor who may be alone, knock on their door or go to the supervisor in the building or get a friend in the building to come with you and knock on several doors and take care of your neighbors, because they're the ones who are shut-ins who are actually going to get really sick or ill or die during this heat dump.
And it's going to make you feel good. It goes back
That's right.
doing good deeds.
Yeah, it goes back to, and you can do it as a team. You may not feel comfortable, but if you have somebody else and say, hey, I want to knock on some doors here, will you help me? Somehow when you go with your bud or someone else, it's a lot easier. And if they open the door and there are two people there, it's also easier, like, why are two people standing in front of my door versus one person, you know?
Yeah, I do understand that, but I also am concerned about folks who think they can tough it out. This is Wisconsin. We're a hardy breed here that we can get through this. We've gotten through everything else.
We're trained for cold weather. You know, 5 degrees below zero, we're a hardy breed.
We got this.
You know, yes. We wear clothing and we stay inside. But the heat, that's something down south. You know, this occurs in Texas. We ain't in Texas. We're in Wisconsin. But you're right. We're hardy people and we can do it on our own. And that actually is one of the things that prevents people from getting health for a whole bunch of things. If you look at depression, people go, well, I'm hardy, even though I'm seriously depressed. I can take care of it myself, when many people can't, when they need counseling and or antidepressants and or other help from their ministers or their rabbis or their priests. You know, people tough it out and they shouldn't. We are also a team state. And so if we're a team state and you're playing alone, you're not part of the team, and the team is anyone you're connected to. And yes, you can ask them for help. And yes, you can pay them back later by giving them some food or helping them. I mean, it's doing that. It's not being a loner within the state.
What are the warning signs that you might be in danger from this heat?
Well, a fast heart, that can be a warning sign. You're not sweating. And it's hot. That's usually a sign of dehydration. You're not drinking enough. Dizziness, that when standing up, all of a sudden you go, I feel a little bit dizzy. When you go to the bathroom and you sit on the commode, when you stand up, you feel wobbly and uneasy because, once again, you may be dehydrated and overheated. Anything you do that normally is in your active living where you feel like, I don't know if I can do this, can be a sign of the beginning of heat stroke. Now, there is something else that I want to talk about with this. If you're in a, if you're by kids, let's say at a soccer tournament now, I mean, there's still our soccer tournaments and baseball, and there's a young person who is clearly overheating and they drop to the ground. Somebody calls 911, but then immediately you've got to cool that person down. And you want to do it at the moment that you see it. And the way you do it is you get a tarp. There's usually somebody with a tarp in one of these events, a parent with a tarp. And get a tarp. You say, hey, I've got to get a tarp. Somebody will have something. You take all the ice from all the ice buckets that are around in there, pour in all the liquid. It doesn't matter what it is, water or anything else. And you put the person in there to start the cooling. The cooling is like CPR for heat. So people may wait for the ambulance. That's too long. You can start it right away by immediately cooling down the person. And with ice and pop and soda and beer and water, it doesn't make a difference what it is. You're going to put that person in it. You know, they're going to clean up later. Don't worry about that. And you're going to begin to cool them down. And that's something people should be aware of, and they're not. And the same is true during, you know, these ideas when kids are in bands and they're walking with, you know, beautiful, wonderful wool band coats because they look good and they get too hot. A number of them just kind of fall out. Same thing. They need to be cooled down immediately before the ambulance arrives.
And why is that? What are the effects of sustained heat illness?
Well, first of all, you can die. I mean, that's the bad sustain. But you can also cause, there can also be things that happen within your brain. If your brain goes up above 106, 107 degrees, you can begin to see things that are almost like a stroke, can have mini strokes within your brain. Your heart, you know, pumps fast, but you're dehydrated. Other things that can occur, there's a cascade of bad stuff that can happen with a little bit of pre-knowledge of what to do that makes a difference. And in my column, in the Wisconsin State Journal. I always go over that once a year. And then in my podcast, you know, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor, I also go over it. And we got to get the word out because we worry about cold in our state and we kind of shovel off heat. We go, oh, it's hot, but we don't think about, like, now it's going to be in the 90s. That's serious.
It is serious, and if it's me that's experiencing this dizziness or notices that I am no longer sweating, what immediate steps should I take? Should I also seek to cool off immediately? Should I get in a hot, cold shower? What do you think? Drink?
Well, first thing, you want to drink. If you're not sweating, you're dehydrated. So you want to drink, and you want to drink as much as you can. And it doesn't have to be cold water. It can be tepid. It's whatever you can drink a lot. And then, yes, getting into a cold shower or a bath is even better. I mean, I have a bathtub in my house, but I use it for my grandchildren. I haven't taken a bath, oh, I don't know, can't remember when, but this, you're laughing.
Yeah, because I can't remember when either, but it might be an issue. I mean, it might be the difference between life or death when it comes to heat like this.
You put in cold water and you get in the bath, and it's going to immediately cool you down much quicker than a shower. There's no comparison between a cold water bath and a shower. So if you feel like you're dehydrated, turn on the bathtub, get in the bathtub, and cool off. And at some point, you're going to cool, you know, and then you can get out of it. But a bath is much better. Yeah. I'll have to make sure my bathtub works.
And drink. But does it matter what you drink? Is it better to have Gatorade than water because it's got electrolytes in it? I would imagine avoid alcoholic beverages because that has a tendency to dehydrate. Yeah. But so does caffeine, right?
Yeah. What you want to do is you want to have something that's the closest to water. So water's the best. A Gatorade may be around. If you've got that, that'll be good. You could use a little glucose, so you could actually have any kind of soda with or without glucose. There's nothing wrong at this point in actually putting glucose into your system. It will help. So this is the time that I would recommend drinking soda. No alcohol and no coffee. Coffee is a mild diuretic, and alcohol has its own stuff. You don't want to drink alcohol because if you're not feeling good and then you have alcohol on board, you're not going to know what's going on. So this is not a reason to start drinking beer or wine or any of the coolers or vodka. No. I would stay away from all alcohol. And frankly, when you're outside in hot weather like this, you should be careful about how much alcohol you drink. I mean, we drink too much in our state. We're number one in binging. You know, our alcohol consumption is more and more, although it's tapering down. And on hot days like this, it's a time not to drink beer, maybe one beer, maybe one of the good NA beers if you want to taste. But if you're outside and you're getting hot and you start drinking beer for that, you're going to be drunk, hot, and sick. And that's a bad combination.
That sounds terrible. But this heat is serious, and and it can be life and death, especially for people with pre-existing conditions, especially folks who are older. But if you are already out and you're already drinking beer or other alcoholic cocktails and you begin to feel, I don't know, dizziness, what's the remedy there? Is it still the same? Is it still like the CPR for heat stroke?
Yeah. Well, first of all, if you've gone out and you only have beer in your cooler, that's the wrong cooler. Let's start with that. I mean, if your cooler is filled with beer and nothing else or soft drinks, you got to think about what you're doing. So that's first of all. But the answer is, if you are really, truly dehydrated, would beer be better than nothing? Yes, no doubt. You know, 12 ounces, 16 ounces, not 32 ounces. That can make the difference.
Dr. Zorba Pastor is our guest. He is the host of the podcast Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. You may remember him from the nationally syndicated public radio show Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And if you have questions for the good doctor, he'll take them today at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Got about a minute here, Zorba, but Tour de France riders can be seen putting large blocks of ice under their jerseys on their necks while they are in the race. Is cooling the neck's effective part of the body, or is that just a feeling?
Oh, no, it's definitely doing some cooling. Okay. It's cooling down the neck, and then it's, you know, and then it's maybe icing down their back. And so it's definitely a feeling that gets them over the heat. But it's definitely anything you put on your body that's going to cool you works. And that block of ice, is going to work for them and let them stay in the race.
I've seen that in the World Cup too. During the hydration breaks, they put like a necklace of ice around their necks.
Cool their body down. Absolutely makes a difference.
Oh, that's good to know. If you have questions for the good doctor, join our show, 1-800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. Our conversation continues with Zorba next, right here on The Lee Rayburn Show. If you love Zorba Pastor on Your Health on Wisconsin Public Radio, you'll very much appreciate his new podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. And he joins us this hour on The Lee Rayburn Show to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@wpr.org. As Ray did, John emailed us to ask what the current medical advice would be for this year's COVID and RSV vaccination, specifically for seniors, Zorba.
Well, RSV is one and done. That's what it appears to be at this point. So we don't know if it will need a booster. When the measles vaccine first came out in the 60s. But when it first came out, we thought it was a one and done vaccine. And then it turned out people needed a booster. You got it 18 months and then at 5 years of age. And then it lasted for your entire life, as far as we know. So right now, the RSV appears to be a vaccine that lasts forever. So once you get it, you don't need a second one. And that may change in the future. Science isn't a vote. It's always changing things, moving on. Let's realize about 3,000 kids, 2 to 3,000. There are a number of kids to get in the hospital from RSV, 20 to 50,000. And I can't remember exactly the number of children who die, but it's more than 1,000. But 15,000 adults die of RSV every year. In other words, it's not just a kid thing. It's an adult thing, mostly in people over the age of 65 who get it. They get RSV, get a pneumonia, and die. So this vaccine is good. And like all vaccines, it's good. It's based on science. And if you have questions, go to the CDC website, look at Mayo, look at a bunch of other things. But everyone should get the vaccine, one and done. COVID, every year I'm getting a booster. Like I'm getting my influenza booster. I want to get it. I don't want to get COVID. I did get COVID once after I was boosted, and it wasn't too bad for me. But I know people who have lost their sense of smell. There are people who get long COVID where they feel fatigued and never feel like they've recovered. It's a very strange, strange virus because it changes your nasal passage. One guy says when he smells roses, one of my patients, it smells to him like stinky garbage.
What?
So you can't be near roses ever at all. Not with other flowers, just with that. So, I'm for every, September, I get an immunization for that. But RSV is different. I don't want to link them together because some people are going to say, I'll get an RSV, but I don't want to get COVID. I don't want to get influenza. They should be kept separate because some vaccines are better than no vaccines.
But COVID seems relatively off our radar right now, that people might not be thinking about it. And since they're not thinking about it, they may not be thinking about a booster shot for it.
That's right. That's right. But in September, when we start thinking about influenza, then we'll start to think about COVID again. And then you have a certain percentage of the population. And by the way, when we were indoors during COVID, there was very few deaths based on influenza, giving an example of how many deaths. But influenza still kills anywhere between 30 and 70,000 people every year in the U.S. influenza. I mean, that's still the big boy on the block.
Just the common flu is still downright deadly.
Flu. Yeah, right.
So let's shift now to this story of this parasite that seems to be cyclopsoriasis. psoriasis? Is that what it's called? This parasite that seems to be causing violent diarrhea? This just in from the Washington Post. Federal and state officials are investigating whether Taco Bell restaurants may have played a role in one of the largest U.S. outbreaks of this gastrointestinal illness, which is caused by a parasite that can contaminate fresh produce. And it also seems to be part of the story because I remember in 2018, it was potentially linked to McDonald's restaurants, this same parasite.
Right, right. So the issue is, you know, fresh produce is fresh. So that means we don't pasteurize it, we don't heat it, we want to eat fresh things and we like it. But parasites can contaminate things because they come from huge mega farms, you know, and then when they go and pick the vegetable or the fruit, and they go from one, let's say one plant is contaminated, and then they go from plant to plant to plant, the contamination occurs that way. Then it goes in whatever the hopper is, they go through a wash cycle, but it's not the wash cycle that you can do at home. So, and there are a number of parasites. Summer is sort of parasite, you know, it's from a parasite point of view, it's like happy days because, we're on picnics and we take fresh fruit and we have lettuce and everything. And parasites go, summer is great, winter, not so great. So there always are outbreaks. Cryptosporidium was an outbreak in Milwaukee years ago that was contaminated in water supply. We always get salmonella around this time of year because of undercooked ground beef that comes basically from massive ground beef factories, not your local butcher usually, which is more and more rare. And so we always say cook ground beef. You know, you want to make sure the ground beef is cooked to a minimum. I don't remember the temperature. Poultry, I think, is 175. I always have to look at it. All those things because of salmonella. And so this is one of numerous things that can occur. The answer is take your fruits and veggies, wash them. I would put them in a sink. They don't need bleach or anything else.
Good. Whoa, wait a minute. Putting bleach on food sounds dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. But people do dangerous things.
That's not a smart thing to do. That's not.
No, not at all. Not at all. People think they should put bleach in the water and they put it on there because that'll kill it. Oh. And the answer is right. That's the wrong thing to do.
It'll kill lots of things, including potentially your digestive tract.
That's right. Would not be. Yes, it would. That's right. It wouldn't. Yeah, it would clear out the wrong stuff. So just a lot of water on there. And you can put it in the sink like a bath, you know. Fill up the sink or a tub or a pot with water and just shake it out. And that's how you clean things out. You know, there have been outbreaks in a number of things over the years. Bean sprouts, that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. They were always at salad bars. And then they stopped having them for a long time because they really couldn't be washed effectively. I've now seen them again. So they must have figured out a more effective way to wash them to keep them safe.
Cyclosporiasis. I just wanted to say that right once today. So cyclosporiasis is this parasite that has evidently hospitalized more than 80 people as of last Thursday, according to the CDC. And back to that Washington Post story for a moment, notices have been posted at some Detroit area Taco Bell restaurants last week that told customers the chain was currently unable to sell lettuce, cilantro, onion, pico de gallo, and guacamole due to a nationwide recall, which would leave just about the meat and cheese. But how would I go about eating safely here? Should I avoid veggies?
No, I'm just thinking of a taco without anything else. I'm sorry. No, you should not avoid veggies.
Okay.
You should wash them. We need them. You should wash them. We don't, first of all, in the whole United States, that number is not a large number. You know, 1,000 times more people or 10,000 times had diarrhea. We've all had explosive diarrhea. Washing it is going to decrease. The risk that you're going to be hospitalized is minimal if you wash your fruits and veggies. That's all. Wash them. You know, we did that during COVID also.
Right.
We often washed our fruits and veggies, and that's the way to do it. No, I would eat the same way you normally do. I would just be more careful with sanitation.
I can't go. Usually you think of summer as construction season, but for Zorba Pastor, it's parasite season. 1-800-642-1234 if you've got questions, or you can email us talk@WPR.org. What do you have coming up on the Stay Well with Zorba Pastor podcast, Zorba?
Well, I'm going to talk about something that's new that is actually just was released today from JAMA. So there's been a whole thing having to do with, is there a blood test that may predict whether or not you get Alzheimer's or another form of dementia? And that's an issue. It was just released today from the Alzheimer Association International Conference. It was released at, I think, 12 o'clock Eastern time. It might be Central, so we're beyond that. So this is a very interesting study. These are very hard studies to take off, and they're looking at something called phosphorylated tau-217, or P, capital P, dash TAU-217. Big fancy name. And you'll be able to look it up because it was just released. So they've been measuring this for years. They think that this particular protein is responsible for what are called amyloid production that then settles in your brain and produces plaques and tangles. It produces the disruption in brain cells of Alzheimer's. Now, first of all dementia isn't Alzheimer's. It's probably only half. Small stroke, Parkinsonian, Alzheimer's, and of course mixed alcoholism, many other things. But Alzheimer's is the big kid on the block. And we'd like to know with some reliability if we're prone towards it. And I'll explain why you might want to know that. First of all, you might want to know it, but you might not want to know it. Your choice. So in a number of longitudinal studies, they have been measuring this for the last 14 or 15 years because they thought that this might be involved with Alzheimer's. And what they discovered is that people who had normal, this is a 13-year study. It's actually a study of six other major studies. That's where they grabbed the data. So they looked over 13 years. People came in the study cognitively intact. If they had high numbers of this particular protein in their blood, what was the risk that they would develop cognitive decline? And the answer was, it appears that the risk might have been as high as 35%. That's a big number. It's not a small number, if this holds true. Hard study to replicate because you can't just look at a measurement of the blood test. You've got to wait maybe 10 to 15 years to know if you're going to get dementia. So it's a hard thing to do. And so right now, it's not recommended that people get this blood test, although that may change with this particular study, but it's not recommended. But if you would want to know, let's assume I would want to know, my mom had Alzheimer's, my wife Penny of 50 years had some form of dementia that might have been a combination of things. And so I might want to know. So if the tests were positive, what difference would that make in your life? Well, you might eat better. You might exercise more. You might wear a helmet when you're doing things to protect your brain. You might not engage in those type of activities. I would cut out all alcohol because I think alcohol is definitely a risk factor for dementia. I don't care if, you know, even in a small dose. I would take care of the salt in my body. I would do everything to be cardiovascularly perfect. So this test, and the information is going to be in the news probably today and tomorrow, I think is going to become a test that is going to be used in the future in healthcare. I find it really exciting.
This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association, peer-reviewed and published today, and it has to do with a potential link between Alzheimer's, other forms of dementia, and this protein that you call p-tau-217, and there is this blood test that can detect it?
Right. And I get the printout about a week before everyone else, so I can comment on it, write an article, know about it. But yeah, it's published in JAMA, which means the study, which was presented at the Alzheimer's Association meetings, was juried by scientists that said this looks like a good study. And it comes on the heels of some Mayo Clinic work where they've also been following this protein. And I want to go back to something interesting. In the 1970s, we never treated high blood pressure like we did now. Mm-hmm. We didn't jump in until your blood pressure was 160 over 100 because we didn't think it meant very much. And nobody wanted to take a pill for blood pressure. Why should I do that when it doesn't bother me? And then a big study came out in 74 called the VA study, which they showed treat high blood pressure, you prevent stroke. Here we are 50 years later, and our stroke has dropped by 75%. because of the treatment of high blood pressure and cholesterol and others. So this may be the beginning of this kind of research. If we can predict it, then we might be able to follow it and find out what other things we should do to prevent it. I think it's a monumental study.
It may be the breakthrough that for so many they've been waiting for. And I want to go back to a little bit about the connections here between this protein, the amyloid protections, and the gunk that gets up in our brain. Can you put that all together for us, Zorba?
Well, we know that people have, there are interesting things about Alzheimer's. We know that people have Alzheimer's. If you do it, you can't see it. You have to do a brain autopsy, that they have lots of amyloid around their brain, this protein.
Plaque.
Why is it gone haywire? I don't know. You know, we don't know, but it's plucked out in different things. It disturbs the electrical conductions in different parts of your brain. So some people have a rapid decline, some a minimal decline. But there was a famous study that's ongoing called the Nun Study out of Milwaukee, where they looked at nuns and they discovered every nun said, I will have my brain autopsied if you show signs of dementia or not. And what they discovered was there were some people who had the plaques and tangles of Alzheimer's who never showed signs of Alzheimer's during their life. So these are nuns who didn't smoke, drank very little alcohol, if any. And it shows that lifelong learning is one of the protective things for Alzheimer's. And there may be other issues, but they found that out, and that's very interesting. So even if you have these plaques and tangles, it might be that learning, pushing yourself, and listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, well, and in using your curiosity might actually be, and I'm doing it in a fun way, but might actually be one of the protective things for possible things that are going on mechanically within your brain.
This goes back to what you said at the beginning of our conversation about whether you're either expanding or contracting, and expanding
right.
may prevent some forms of dementia, and contracting may accelerate it to some degree.
Right. And expanding your life gives you joy. That's the other thing. You know, I've discovered I have many people, I'm 79 in August, and I've discovered a number of my friends are just kind of not doing very much, not supplanting with anything, watching too much. They're telling, you know, they talk about their grandchildren. They may talk about where they last were, and then they do something they call an organ recital. You talk about your organs. I don't mean like an organ. It's an organ recital. Oh, it's my back. Oh, it's my liver. Oh, it's my prostate.
That, I thought it was actually a concert. I thought you were talking about a concert with organs. There's nothing wrong with that.
No,
but
yeah,
no, this is a rundown.
No, it's an organ recital where people recite what's going on with their organs. And so that's not expanding your life. Talk about what you're doing differently. Go with somebody who's 20 years younger than you or 40 years, and you'll expand your life. People look alike differently, and they will, if you can make a friend or be with somebody who's 20 years younger than you, they have a different life. You have a different life. That intergenerational connection improves your life dramatically as you get older.
One other aspect of this before we move on, Zorba, and that is that if you took this blood test and found that you were inclined and this blood test were effective in identifying potential for forms of dementia, and you found that you tested positive, that one of the first things you'd do is cut out alcohol. For some, alcohol would be one of those ways to alleviate, would be a quality of life issue. But if you knock that out, why would you take that away to prevent certain
brain
diseases?
Well, alcohol plays a role in many things within our brain. You know, so, you know, from a point of view, we think about it's a risk factor for atrial fibrillation, which increases with age. The estimate now is that anywhere between 20 and 30% of the people over 80 have intermittent atrial fibrillation, which then can lead to stroke because they have it on and off, or they have it continuously. We know that alcohol causes other things. I recently looked at pedestrian deaths in New York City, and they now estimate that half of all pedestrian deaths are due to pedestrians who drank too much or were stoned when they were walking. It wasn't just the car that bumped into them. It's they are inebriated when they're walking down the street or not paying attention to what you do when you're walking, you know, around cars. So if it's a quality of life issue and you can't give it up, That deserves a conversation. If you can't give up your alcohol, it's a conversation piece. And then you have to decide, here's a risk factor. Can I give it up? And you make the decision. Some people say, I'm not going to give it up. I don't mind. That's cool. Other people say, hey, it doesn't mean that much to me. I'm going to give it up.
Alcohol may indeed be bad for your health in more ways than one. And for more on Alzheimer's, we have one of the authorities, Dr. Nate Chin, joining us Thursday, July 30th with his new book, When Memory Fades, What to Expect at Every Stage, From Early Signs to Full Support for Alzheimer's and Dementia. He's a University of Wisconsin Health geriatrician and associate director of their Geriatric Memory Program as the medical director of UW's Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention. So that full conversation will be here on Thursday, July 30th. Before we're done with you, Zorba, I want to ask about Wisconsin applying to become one of 10 food is medicine states. We just last hour we talking about, you know, garbage in, garbage out, and fruits and veggies in, and something good comes out. The program's run by the Center for Healthcare Strategies, a not-for-profit looking to improve the health of people enrolled in Medicaid. What's your thoughts on this program, Zorba?
Well, I think it's a great idea. How you roll it out, how we do it, becomes a little bit problematic in one way. First of all, it's great. It's great for the health of all of us to have fresh fruits and vegetables. The problem is the stores have to carry the fresh fruits and vegetables. So many people shop in dollar stores, Dollar General, and the other stores, and they often don't keep perishables because they perish and people don't necessarily pick them. So you've got to encourage that and do it the right way and give some sort of incentive for small stores to carry the perishables, because that's where people shop. And that's one of the things that'll be worked out. But we've got to start somewhere, and this is the way to start.
How do you see food as medicine? Is it a movement? Is it good health? Sage advice?
Oh no. It has been a movement on and off for years. Now, so back in the 1890s in England, there were a number of very rich people who weighed too much. And so they had the equivalent of the Atkins diet. They said it was bacon, pork, and beef tallow will help you lose weight, because these big overweight guys and women wanted to lose weight. So that was the tallow diet. So that was really like the Atkins diet. So this has been going on for years and centuries. The answer is yes. Fresh fruits and vegetables, the more colorful they are, the more micronutrients they concern. If the fresh food is not fresh, frozen may be better, because it actually has more micronutrients. So fresh is not always good. Huh. It's got to be pretty fresh. Keep it as a variety, because color and micronutrients go together. We don't know exactly what they are. Fish oil is not the same as salmon. It's only one part of salmon. So the variety of foods that you eat make a difference, and they do really make good health.
David emailed and wanted to know your perspective on drinking fluids from plastic bottles. Do you have concerns about that?
Well, I think going to BPA-free bottles are good. I think that's probably a good idea. The research on what plastic does to us is sort of on and off, you know. So how much it actually affects us or doesn't affect us. But I want to have anything in my body affect me as little as possible. So I would say BPA-free, and there's some plastic you can do. And I think it's better to have a bottle that you bring in, and you put the water in the bottle yourself. And also, we don't need it in the landfill. I mean, think about it. We used to take water out of the sink, and now we take it out of a bottle, and those bottles are in the ocean, and, you know. Yeah.
Well, I used to take it out of a garden hose when I was a kid. Now that I look back on that,
wasn't
I think.
The best?
No, maybe not the best idea.
But I know, but it was cold, and it would spray all over you, and you'd get wet. I loved it.
I remember the taste, but there is a bigger picture here, Zorba, and we're running out of time. And that's the microplastics that we can't prevent from getting in our body anymore, because it feels like it's just everywhere and there's no way to avoid it.
It is everywhere. So if you look at the food that you store, you want to store it in glass containers or containers that do not have microplastics. You want to stay away as much as possible from plastic bags, you know, that have, you know, the Ziploc bags, because they have more microplastics. And then you want to go into things that are stable. And you can find those on the internet. You can search as what to do. But that's a big thing. Leftovers that are stored correctly, drinking water out of the right bottles, that'll make a difference in your microplastic that you consume, that you don't want.
But there are also microplastics in the environment as a result of the products that we use that go well beyond food.
Right, right. Yeah, you mean cosmetics mm-hmm. and everything else. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's all around us. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a doctor. I can't solve that.
Well, you've done the heavy lifting for us today.
I tried, but I can't solve that. That's right. Hey, we're not going to get rid of our cosmetics.
Not overnight, but maybe we could find a better way towards looking good and feeling
absolutely.
Good at the same time.
Of course. So you need someone on your show to talk about that. Look good and feel good in a more natural way and avoid microplastics. That would be a great show to have.
Well, in the meantime, you are always welcome here, and it is an honor to have you, and you are a treasure. So Zorba, thank you so much.
It's been an honor to be here. Thank you.
Do not miss Dr. Zorba Pastor's new podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor, and we thank him again for being a part of the show, as I thank you and our team as well, executive producer Jill Nadeau, producers Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, our technical director, Jeff Robbins. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we'll see you tomorrow from 11 to 1 right here on WPR News.